LGBTQQIA at the Supreme Court, plus an impeachment update, going to be every episode from here on out, and China and the NBA on this episode of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are The Uprising with Scott Cosenza.
I felt this thrill going up my leg.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
A president! Can you believe it?
This is somebody who knows what's right and what's wrong.
You know what podcasts are, by the way?
Talk shows for people who cannot make it in talk radio.
I just want to say to the men of this country, just shut up, do the right thing. For a change.
I think possibly that's the most unattractive form in which prejudice can be met in this country, is the rage of the entitled.
Welcome back to The Uprising, a podcast of LibertyNation.com. I am your host, Scott D. Cosenza. Joining me today is Timothy E. Donner and Archie, no middle name, no last name. We'll call him Cosenza, the podcasting dog. Thank you so much for joining us, Tim.
The E, it's not necessary to stop after the E in my name.
You have several other.
In yours, though, you... It's important to stop after the middle initial D, lest people confuse it with the Cosenza.
This has been...
See, it just gives me an
excuse. You're confusing people. This is like why you shouldn't say the name of the school shooter. You're just encouraging that kind of thought. Nobody... You put it in the head of people who hadn't had it there, so...
At least I'm not just doing it subliminally.
Okay. Supreme Court's back in session. They took their luxurious months long. I think June was the last time they were on the bench. Now, they do kind of work and read briefs and stuff, but they do it from their Tuscan villas. And
they generally are reading,
kind of thing.
Probably reading briefs in their briefs.
Yes, in their Bahamian manses and so forth.
Class envy watch,
well,
Scott.
Tim, there. Well, I'll leave that aside. All right. The big case this week, Tim, is three cases, and it's the whether or not homosexuals are going to be included in the meaning of the word sex in the Civil Rights Act of 1964, Title VII of which says you can't discriminate against somebody in employment areas on the basis of X, Y, and Z. Z is sex. X and Y are race, national origin, etc. And then the question is also posed to the court in one of the cases about whether a trans person can be discriminated against in employment. You know, can you fire somebody or not hire somebody if they're gay or trans or other gender identity according to this law? Now, many states have already all kinds of prohibitions against this. So it's not like, you know, people in any place in the United States can go ahead and do this. There are many state-level protections against this such discrimination. But also, there are states without those protections. And because there are no federal protections from doing so, it's legal in those states to say, hey, I don't hire gay guys for my job, for this, you know, store, so go somewhere else.
Well, we talked about this a little bit on the radio show, and the whole concept of gender, sexual preference, the, you know, the 72 flavors of gender on Facebook and the whole subculture that either engenders that or that engenders a chicken and egg thing, I suppose. But I think it's all tied up together in the social justice movement. And that's the reason why I've said it just seems inevitable that the rights traditionally granted to women will inevitably, and I'm not doing this from an analytical standpoint of the law itself, but from the fact that the court has become, let's face it, so political, one of these days is going to turn leftward. And when it does, do you see the way it is now being preserved, overturned?
Well, the thing that drives me crazy is, and for the gay marriage issue, just a little bit more clear line. So I'll argue by analogy with respect to that issue. The country, by and large, seems to be headed – seemed. This is before the Obergefell decision. Obergefell is the name of the case that made gay marriage legal in the United States. And this is going to get
– landmark.
And this
landmark
is going to get
case.
Into a little bit of the minutia, legally speaking. But it's important – and regular people can understand it. It just sort of – if it's well described to them, which I will try to do, and if they take the time –
I'll grade you on it. Yeah.
But it's the method by which it's included into the law, which is important for everything else down the line. So – if there is a constitutional amendment that says gay marriage is legal, for instance, that would be one thing. There's another legal method, which I favored at the time, which was that the full faith and credit clause of the United States Constitution be used to honor the gay marriages of states that performed them. So marriage is a state issue. There's no federal you can't get married. There's a federal legal recognition of marriage, but there's no federal marriage license.
I always thought that the full faith and credit argument was a maybe not unimpeachable, but a very strong argument, because that's what the joining of the states, the union of the states, is all about. That one state has to recognize the laws of another.
So for people who don't understand, what that would do is that anybody could get married, just like I'm a resident of Virginia. I can go to California and get married tomorrow to anybody who I'm legally able to get married to. And when I come home, Virginia doesn't require me to get remarried, because this is where my domicile is. So what that would do is it would say that one state has to grant legal authority to the legal acts of another state. And if that state, for instance, gives you a marriage license and says that you are husband and wife, or husband and husband, or wife and wife, or non-binary, whatever it may be, then when you go back to the other state, they have to recognize it legally. Now, that is a burden for somebody who lives, and I'll just pick on the Alabamans because I foresee that they wouldn't want to embrace gay marriage. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But if you live in Alabama, it is an imposition to have to go to Florida to get married. Or get on a plane and go somewhere else. But it's not like you're not legally able to do so in the country where, in other words, you can return home with that bundle of legal rights that's included in marriage. And because of that, I just thought it would be an elegant way for the law to recognize that there are these people who want to get married and allow them to be a part of the society of wherever they live. They have to leave that place to go get married in some instances. But instead, what we had was the Supreme Court said, Tim, that the 14th Amendment to the Constitution guarantees the right of same-sex couples to marry. Now, I don't know it by heart. I'm going to look it up. But the 14th Amendment was passed in what year?
That's equal protection. 14th Amendment is one of the Civil War amendments, 67,
1868. July 9, 1868.
Missed it by 1 year.
So the idea that the people who voted on the 14th Amendment in 1968 thought that they were voting about on the rights of men to marry other men or women to marry other women, I think doesn't pass the laugh test, right?
Right,
it's beyond ridiculous to suggest that that's what they were voting on. Nobody thought that at the time.
But can I just interrupt for a second, just to kind of play devil's advocate? Is the fact that the issue didn't exist mean that the right didn't exist? In other words, there was no issue about it then. It was not anything that was on the radar. But does that mean that because the issue didn't exist, that the right didn't exist?
Well, how can I vote for a right to be included in a law if I never even contemplated it? And the plain language of it to the reader doesn't express it. That's what the kind of Scalia method of, you know, what would an ordinary person, ordinary, I don't mean base level intelligence, but an ordinary intelligent person in 1868 think that that meant. And that's a way to interpret that law, that what's not included in that. And that, of course, and I hate that I have to say it, and I really don't have to because this is the uprising, but I'm going to say it anyway. That doesn't mean that people who think that gay marriage wasn't included in the 1868 civil 14th Amendment, that it shouldn't be included in our laws today. Not to mention the fact that there are plenty of people like me who think that
there should be no government.
Well, I want to make my point here, which is that it's the libertarian point, which is it's ridiculous that governments sanctify private relationships anyway. There are plenty of people like me who think that the government should not be in the business of granting marriage license. It's a religious construct of the state.
Well,
and so I oppose it on those grounds.
Yeah, but you know what? As a believing Christian, I kind of look at it the other way, which is we really have reached a point where I think we have to separate out religious marriage and state marriage. In other words, all marriages that are recognized by the state, then it's a state marriage. It's a government marriage. Because you can't just deny the fact that it's become a government institution. I wish it wasn't. I agree with you, but it is, and it's not going away. So then what about the protections for churches that don't,
hold on, let me interrupt you and say, and that's part of the argument.
Yeah.
That's part of the argument on the other side of the Obergefell decision, which is that society changes. This is now part of what's included, and we can loop that back around to the transgender and homosexual inclusion into the Civil Rights Act. That's what those courts have said. So I read the, for instance, Second Circuit Court of Appeals, one of the cases, there were three cases that brought these issues to the court this week. One of those cases out of New York was the case of a skydiving instructor who was gay, and he often told, they do these tandem jumps where you're strapped right in to the body of the instructor, and he's behind you. And women can be intimidated by that, apparently. And so he, as a comforting measure, would tell his female clients, hey, basically, don't worry about it. I'm not going to try to, cop a feel. I'm a gay guy. And this woman complained. And there's some the complaint kind of doesn't go into what I've been able to read, the details. But I think there was an allegation that she was just homophobic and told her boyfriend or something. And it's not quite clear. But in any case, and she alleged that he improperly touched her. I just give you a little bit of background on that. But the case is about whether or not then he can be fired for being a gay guy. So he's fired because he was gay. He says that's based on my sex. In other words, if I was a woman and said I was, hey, don't worry about it, I'm attracted to men, right? In other words, he's the skydiving instructor. That wouldn't be an issue here. We wouldn't be having this discussion. He wouldn't have been fired. Therefore, the firing is based on his sex as a man who's attracted to men. So
you can't tell the players without a scorecard. I'll tell you.
I expected Tim to be more dismissive of these claims than I was after I read the pleadings, and because I thought it was more akin to the gay marriage issue. And the gay marriage issue, I think, is just – it's to me, it doesn't pass the laugh test to say that the 14th Amendment protects that behavior. But Justice Scalia himself – and I did write about this for LibertyNation.com, Tim. That was a good title, that piece, by the way. It's like Rainbow something or other. Anyway, Rainbow Flags to the Supreme Court.
Oh, no, you just outed the fact that – you don't write your own titles.
I did write my own title that was rejected.
It always gets rejected. Rainbow, I mean, occasionally
Rainbow
it gets
writes
rejected,
at the Supreme
yes.
Court. And there's a Scalia quote in there, and I'm going to read it. And it's from a case that expanded sexual harassment rights to people in same-sex sexual harassment. So when those claims first arose, they said, listen, sexual harassment covers men and women, doesn't cover same-sex sexual harassment. And this poor guy who was really horribly sexually harassed, and in this case in 1998 called Onicle v. Sundowner, Scalia says, statutory prohibitions often go beyond the principal evil to cover reasonably comparable evils. And it's ultimately the provisions of our laws rather than the principal concerns of our legislators by which we are governed. So, just because it may not have been considered by somebody doesn't mean necessarily that the law isn't the law. They wrote it down and they passed it. So if it's clearly covered, it should clearly be covered. And in the sexual harassment instance, that was a unanimous court. The conservative, Scalia himself, included same-sex harassment in the law because it was so clearly included by the text of the law. So
it seems to me that, something that isn't specifically enumerated or described in specific terms in the Constitution in any even broad interpretation, you can't cite the Constitution then, but you also can't cite the Constitution in saying it prohibits something that is explosively controversial as to whether it's a constitutional issue or not. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In other words, it doesn't include, but it doesn't exclude either.
Yeah. So I want to get into a little bit of the math here, which we talked about on the radio show, Liberty Nation Radio, available perhaps in your local market. We're syndicated in how many markets?
We're in about three dozen markets. We really want people to go to the site, to libertynation.com, because you can just get it anytime.
Well, it's old-fashioned radio. It's nice to I like it that way.
But the important thing,
I like to consume it on the air sometimes.
I mean, you know, actually, we made a big change because, you know, telling tales out of school a little bit, but not really, because everything worked out perfectly. But adding in the video element to this and to the radio show has added a lot to what we have to offer on the site.
As it turns out, I've got a face for video, not just radio. And this is the money maker. There's been a lot of positive response. And we're just going to continue.
Okay, there is a reason. Okay, I really didn't want to say this, but you kind of forced me to. There is a reason that we have a profile shot primarily of you here.
That's where Archie the podcasting dog's value really comes in.
Well, it's very similar to the kind of shot you'd see in a post office.
Let's circle back around here to get back on topic.
Okay.
It's going to take me just a moment to think about how to get back on top.
I wanted to see if I could throw you off.
Oh, I was talking about the math for the Supreme Court decision. So there are two justices on the Supreme Court appointed by Donald Trump. Justice Gorsuch replaced dead Justice Antonin Scalia, Justice Kavanaugh replaced retiring Justice Anthony Kennedy. Now, the vote on the gay marriage issue was 5-4. Kennedy was with the majority.
Kennedy made the majority.
Those are the two.
Kennedy made the minority into the majority.
Thank you for that. That's the appropriate way to say it. He made it because his vote was in doubt and the others weren't. And that's why you say it that way. And that's appropriate. Your attention to that swing vote is appreciated. So the question is, does Gorsuch vote the same way as Scalia does? And then the question is, does Kavanaugh vote the same way that Kennedy does? I think the answer, they're just going to give my quick back of the envelope. I think the answer for Gorsuch is yes, he does vote the same way Scalia does. And the answer for Kavanaugh is no, he doesn't vote the same way as Kennedy does. I think he'll take a more conservative tact. If I'm wrong about that, I think I'm more likely to be wrong about Gorsuch than I am about Kavanaugh. But we'll see. That's my crystal ball reading.
I'm a little surprised to hear you say that, because in some of our offline conversations, most of which you punctuate with the expression, unrecorded podcast, stop now. We need to do it.
It's true.
But in our conversations, you've been particularly impressed with Gorsuch's libertarian bona fides and his rulings. And so are you just kind of bracing that he's going to let you down at some point? Because Kavanaugh's not someone that you seem to be particularly impressed with.
Oh, I'm decidedly not impressed with Justice Kavanaugh.
Very deferential.
He's
to
a bootlicker.
State authority.
Yes, absolutely. No,
are you really going to say you're going to go that far with it? Really?
He is as bad.
Why do you say that?
Viewing the future years of his jurisprudence, I expect if I were to review them in the rearview mirror, there would be a great deal of deference for the state and state power, rather than the individual and individual power. And that's what I see in Justice Kavanaugh's decision-making that I don't see in Justice Gorsuch's. By the way, I also don't see it in most justices on the left or on the right. It's why I think Gorsuch's is really great. I see it a little bit, more than a little bit, in Justice Thomas and a little bit in Justice Scalia, although he was deferential to state power as well. And I am always, Tim, in all things about the primacy. And I said that for you.
Very good. Primacy.
Exactly.
That is so impressive that you did.
And I think that all the good things that have come from the United States of America is this recognition of us as individuals and the celebration of individual rights. And it's this kind of tribalism that we have to work against. In fact, when you look at the LGBT, you know, it's funny, by the
Q.
way. Well, you know what? You know what's funny? I was thinking about this earlier today. I've seen the evolution of all those initials be added to the
I know,
to
we've seen it.
I remember when I was in college.
It was just LG at first, wasn't it?
Yes.
But then it got confused with the electronics company.
No. Then the B's said, hey, the B's get in, right?
Yeah,
and then
that's
the
right.
T's said, the T's get in, okay? And now you got the IAA plus
you know
Q,
what
whatever,
the Q you means?
Know.
You know what the Q means?
Well, there's two Q's. There's queer and questioning.
It's questioning.
There's two Q's.
No.
LGBTQQIA+.
My understanding was that the Q, the first Q, the queer Q, didn't sort of carry the day because it was sort of covered with L and, and the G.
The gender queers,
and the
Tim,
Q
are
going
to write letters. Please direct your correspondence to Tim, not
that
me. I'm woke on that.
No, sure. My understanding was the Q for questioning because the people who were not sure, but we welcome you into the tent too.
There's two Qs. And I'm included in that group too, Tim.
Q squared.
Tim, do that group too. I am included in that group as well, Tim, because I'm an ally. So I want them all to have individual rights and not collective rights. And by the way, I have to say this. And we do have a, trans listeners to the uprising, and we salute them and welcome their listenership. And the idea that they that people who identify as who are trans or are attracted to same sex are part of a community, like they're same-minded, is this laughable thing. Like they can see the LGBTQ community, right? Well, there's no community there. It's not like there's like a, well, which kind of golf course did you join? Well, there's a Jewish golf course, there's a WASPy golf, there's like the LGBTQ golf. No, there's no, that doesn't exist. There's no community there where like transgendered people are really in community with gay men or lesbians. That doesn't exist, and it needn't exist if we respect everybody's individual rights. Then we don't have to fight for class rights or group identity rights.
Exactly, individual rights. Now, Scott, one of the memorable moments I had when I ran for the United States Senate was when I was at it was an event on a weekend. There were a lot of people there. It was some kind of event that was worthy of going to if you're a candidate for the Senate. So I went there.
An event with registered voters present.
With the likely voters,
likely
Scott.
Voters.
Likely voters.
Boom.
Even
higher
more
value,
so.
Yes.
Bingo.
Right.
And a guy comes up to me. And he knew that I was running for the Republican nomination. And he said, I'm gay. He said, are you in favor of gay marriage? And I looked him in the eye and I said, no, I'm not. I said, but I'm going to protect your rights same as everybody else's.
Yeah.
And he looked at me, goes, fair enough. And I think the reason was because I said, you're an individual. Basically, the underlying message was, you're an individual like everybody else, so I'm going to protect your rights. But let me just reemphasize, I'm not going to say, of course I'm going to protect your rights. I'm going to say, I'm going to protect your rights like everybody else's.
This lack of, that cures all. The individual rights protection.
That's what
cures
the whole thing
all.
Is all about, protection of the individual.
Yeah.
And we've lost that. I mean, we've lost that incrementally.
All right, so I'm a more, I don't think it's an insult to say, I'm more of a keen observer of the court's goings-on than you are, so I'll take your kind of arm's-length view. What do you guess is going to be the result? Will the court, and let's divide it up into both the same-sex inclusion into Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act and trans or gender identity inclusion into the same. What do you think they're going to vote?
Oh, I don't think either one of them will pass muster with this court. But it will the moment that there's a progressive majority, which won't happen for a long time, I suspect. But you don't know. I mean, if Trump loses this election and you get a progressive in there and then Thomas dies, let's say, and he's replied, you don't.
Well, there's an interesting wrinkle to the issue, Tim, and I find this a fascinating wrinkle, which is at the time the 1964 Civil Rights Act was passed, in most jurisdictions in America, maybe all, it was illegal to engage in a homosexual relationship.
That's correct. Yeah.
It wasn't illegal to be trans.
And
though.
For many years after that.
Well, sure. Well, we have until Texas v. Johnson, I think.
basically about 20 years.
In any case, yeah, so that may be a stumbling block to the idea that it could have been included because it was often criminally prohibited. So in any case, I think that's an interesting rule. I think those we're going to see likely one of those rights be included. I think that probably trans identity will be included in the act. And those people are suffering from massive amounts of discrimination. So while I don't think that should be part of federal law, in fact, I think it's unconstitutional for the federal government to tell any employer any rule about who they hire or fire or how, except for, you know, the civil law should be able to control that.
Well, I think that from the standpoint of humanity, that if one stops to consider, no matter what one thinks of the what in many ways could be sort of the tragic compulsion to have to change sexes, beyond that is the notion that of thinking about all that they've done and all they've been willing to do and all they've been willing to sacrifice, a lot, including their own dignity, their sexual identity, their physical selves, which they're willing to undergo. I mean, stuff that you and I couldn't even, a lot of pain. So the willingness to do this by itself should accrue by itself some benefit to people who are willing to put their money where their mouth is, mm-hmm. to say, I feel so strongly about it,
right,
that I'm willing to go through all of this stuff in order to get it done.
Well, Tim, that reminds me of Maxine Waters, who was willing to go through all of this stuff. No, I want to turn our attention to the impeachment.
Oh, we're going to go to Mad Max.
We're going to dip our toes into the waters here.
I'm locking and loading on Mad Max.
Let's start with your we'll let Cuctad set the stage here.
Oh, run with that. Oh, my God.
With our impeachment. We're going to do like Nightline, where, like, you know, we're going to go to every night now with the news because of this crisis. Like, it's like an every night
impeachment
uprising.
Crisis day 140.
But let's be frank, a national nightmare is upon us. The basic rules of our democracy are under attack from the president. We begin tonight with a series of admissions by the president that all but assures his impeachment in the House of Representatives. It's a moment of truth for Republicans, and they've been largely silent on what we've seen from the president. Today, he publicly called on two foreign governments to interfere in the presidential election by investigating his chief 2020 political rival.
Okay, so that is the popular name for him is F. Chuck Todd, but I prefer the name Upchuck Todd. And Upchuck perfectly exemplifies the attitude of the swamp journalists who are no longer journalists anymore. I mean, come on. He's sitting there preaching from a soapbox as the anchor of Meet the Press on NBC News. Is this what it's come to? I mean, Tim, you know, unless we needed more evidence, there it is.
This is the uprising, Tim. Let's class it up a little bit. Let's move away from the ad hominem, and I'm going to answer his charge directly with Republicans are silent on this. Well, let's see what Mr. Jim Jordan had to say about the very latest developments, which is with Adam Schiff and his committee releasing selected text messages that they have possession of. The Republicans have asked for the release of all the text messages. This is about ambassadorial texting regarding the phone call itself and whether there is a quid pro quo or something less than that favor for Donald Trump to see Joe Biden get elected, for the Ukraine to get some of our money for aid.
Didn't even tell us that he had met with the whistleblower prior to the whistleblower filing the complaint. Adam Schiff didn't tell us that the way he treated Ambassador Sondland last week in this, Ambassador Volker in this interview last week, that treatment is the reason why the administration, the State Department said, we're not going to subject Ambassador Sondland to the same treatment. And look, we were actually looking forward to hearing from Ambassador Sondland. We thought he was going to reinforce exactly what Ambassador Volker told us last week. But again, unfortunately, when you have a Speaker of the House who says we need to strike while the iron's hot, when you have a chairman of the committee who is so biased against this president that he wouldn't even tell us that he had met with his staff, had met with the whistleblower prior to the whistleblower filing the complaint. And frankly, this is a pattern with Mr. Schiff. He did the same thing, if you remember, the first big hearing the Democrats did this Congress, Michael Cohen. He didn't tell us that his staff had met with Mr. Cohen 4 hours prior to Mr. Cohen testifying. He didn't tell us that last summer he had met with Mr. Simpson out in Colorado, palling around with the guy with Fusion GPS. So this is a pattern. Like I said, we were hoping to hear from the ambassador today, but we understand exactly why the administration, exactly why the State Department has chosen to say, look, if it's going to be this kind of process, if you're going to selectively leak text messages, 67 pages of text messages we had, they take a handful and release to all of you, and not give the full context and not release the transcript, we understand why they made this decision at this.
Well, there's one text in particular that's in question here, and it is so classic of exactly what he's saying. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
No, tell me.
It's the one where the one guy says to the ambassador, I forget who it is, says to him, I don't think it's a good idea to, and I'm paraphrasing here, but I don't think it's a good idea, you know, to hold up aid pending, you know, some kind of investigation. And oh boy, did they flash that out. And then this ambassador comes back and says, the president has made it clear there is to be no quid pro quo raid Ukraine. But that part only came out
right.
when the elite media was forced to release
right.
that part of the text.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen, even from them,
yeah.
that's so spectacularly dishonest?
Well, it's like
dishonest.
The George Zimmerman race quote. Do you know what I'm talking about? There, NBC, I think it was, and if it wasn't NBC, it was one of it was either ABC or CBS, but I'm pretty sure it was NBC. They played the George Zimmerman This is the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin incident. The 911 operator, when George Zimmerman calls 911 to report Trayvon Martin's activities, they ask him for a description, and he describes the kid. And Zimmerman does not mention the kid's race, and they say, "Is he?" They say, what is race, or is he white, black, or Hispanic? And he says he's black. But NBC...
Oh, there you go.
No, you're missing it. No, you're missing it. NBC cut out the part where the 911 operator asked him. So they left it in like...
Right, like
oh,
he wasn't...
He's walking down the street. He's black.
He volunteered
like,
that he's
black. That was a motivating factor behind his call. It was a lie.
We live in a country where hands up, don't shoot is still
yes.
a live
yes.
narrative.
And for people, I'm going to just say this.
Still a live narrative.
Any uprising listeners who don't know, the hands up, don't shoot of Eric Brown was made up for political purposes. All of the black people who saw the shooting or at the time of the shooting who were interviewed by Eric Holder's Department of Justice said they never saw that and they didn't hear it. And it was just made up basically to lionize Mr. Brown, right? I mean...
Now, going back to the impeachment thing, how about the fact that there's now a second whistleblower who's probably the source for the first whistleblower after we've already seen the transcript, which means that what a whistleblower says, quote unquote whistleblower, doesn't even matter. Here's the thing.
When I read the headline, second whistleblower, I was prepared to read about a different account of
right.
a different conversation.
Right. Exactly.
Because that's what the breathless media would have
right.
us believe when they say, it's like.
Second whistleblower emerges.
Right. You mean another person who says you
to
should
say,
take
yeah,
a look
the transcript,
at this phone call.
Yeah, maybe,
right?
maybe what he said is, yeah, the transcript's basically right. Oh, that's your second whistleblower. The transcript that Trump released that the Democrats never thought he would ever release. And then he did. And then he released the complaint by the quote, whistleblower, unquote.
It's exactly this kind of thing. You know, I don't think they have to be, pure as Caesar's wife on this, but they're so dirty. And that's why I wanted to play that's a little longer clip than we usually play, but Mr. Schiff is so dirty and has a reputation for dirty dealing. When we're talking about impeaching a president of the United States, Tim, at what point, you know, these people who pretend that Trump is a toddler and they're the adults in the room, are they expected to act like adults ever? With Mr. Schiff's dramatic reading of his own invention of Mr. Trump's phone call?
Do you ever hear the expression, if you shoot at the king,
you best not miss?
You better kill him. Because if you wound him, you're going to be a lot more wounded. And this leads me into the point of trying to figure out why they're being so aggressive on something that they know the average American doesn't think the president should be removed from office because he mentioned the corruption of a guy who was a political opponent, not his chief political, but a political opponent. If you take Joe Biden seriously, 1% Joe, whatever. But what this may be about, Scott, really, is in discrediting William Barr as best they can on the way to trying to pile up enough soundbite charges. And what I mean by soundbite charges is obstruction of Congress, where you ask for something that's clearly covered by privilege, and then you ask for it anyway, knowing it's not going to be provided, and then you charge obstruction of Congress, right? Isn't that how the game works? But one of the most reliable reporters in Washington, a guy who I really think has a lot of credibility, is John Roberts on Fox News, the good John Roberts, not the Chief Justice, okay? And he reported this week, and he does not report stuff willy-nilly. He is reliable. That doesn't mean he couldn't be wrong here.
He's not fake news, though.
Not fake news. He said that by the end of this month, we're going to get a report on FISA abuse, the FISA warrant, the Trump dossier, which came from Russia, by the way, and that. So the Democrats know there's a train coming down the tracks named William Barr, and he ain't going to be derailed. And they're trying to pile up as much as they can before they get hit with stuff that's real, that's going to be thrown at them. So in a way, you can kind of look at this impeachment stuff as saying this is just a stopgap for now because they know. I mean, it's almost inconceivable that they can't get hit hard just based on what we know about their spying on the Trump campaign already. In other words, we don't need even a whole lot more in the way of revelations to know that this is, you know, what they've done is spectacularly injurious to the Constitution.
Another thing, a bit about the radio, about the recent disclosure this week that a year ago this week, the FBI, the report came out. I think I muddled that. We just got a report publicly released. It was released privately a year ago about the FBI abusing their authority under the FISA warrant and court process. Abusing it, Tim, with how they did it. In other words, they didn't use proper channels or include proper record keeping so that it could be seen, the queries they were making, because it's a highly sensitive thing that all needs to be kind of backed up, and who they were looking at and why. And it wasn't, guess what, it wasn't terror suspects, but it was people's next door neighbors and spouses and former relations, and that's the report that came down. So all that needs to be wrapped up, and I am in agreement with you that's coming down the pike, and it this may all be just an attempt to kind of throw up a massive smokescreen in order to soften that blow when it comes.
And it's not going to soften it, by the way. It's not going to, because, you know, the voters aren't stupid. They can see that there's just been a stream of attempts to classify everything Trump does as impeachable from the moment he was sworn in, actually from the moment that he was elected. I mean, from
when he became a serious threat from then on.
From about 2 a.m. on November 9th, 2016, they were looking to impeach him, looking for anything to fill in the blanks. People aren't stupid. They can see what's happening. And as even John Kasich, of all people, said on the Don Lemon show, as I like to always say, Don Lemon, the most appropriately named man in all of television. Even John Kasich said, Don, in Ohio, they're not talking about Ukraine.
Yeah.
Enough said.
Well, I do want to get back to Mad Maxine, because this, Tim.
Oh, thank you.
This, Tim, is what she said about what should happen to Donald Trump. And she's not in agreement that the people with the people of Ohio.
Does she know that drawing and quartering is no longer legal?
She's much more humane than that. Here's her plan.
Okay. Congresswoman, I want to ask you about something you said. As you know, and many of our viewers know, you speak your mind. Many people like
really?
That. And as I think you know, many people disagree with
you. We love it here on The Uprising.
I want to read something you said today to get a fuller understanding. You said, with regard to Donald Trump, he's using mob language. He's implying people should be killed for whistleblowing. Impeachment's not good enough for Trump. He needs to be imprisoned and placed in solitary confinement. But for now, impeachment is the imperative.
Yes, that's right.
I ask you tonight, are you speaking literally, and do you have any concern you're prejudging the House impeachment and Senate trial process by declaring he should be, I guess,
drawn out in leg irons?
No, not really. As you said, I said impeachment is the imperative. I did express myself in ways to show how terrible I think he is.
Yeah, that other stuff's just the icing on the cake. By the way, he's so dangerous, Tim, he can't be allowed near contact with other prisoners.
Yes, no.
That's how dangerous he is. Okay? I mean, remember now.
Did she realize they're the adults
in the room, not Trump, right?
I want you to give me an over-under of the number of thousands of times that soundbite will be included in Trump for President ads in 2020. What's the
infinity.
Over-under? Infinity. Okay, that's a good number because you can't go over or under it. Okay.
I have two other clips that I think are relevant to the issue, and we're going to tie it in with your report as the Joe Biden for President correspondent to The Uprising, Tim. I have a Kamala Harris quote that I'll save for when we get into your report. But in terms of looping back around to the Chuck Todd issue and the notion of who to believe with these news things. There was something that also occurred on the Meet the Press show, which I listened to. And this is former CIA director John Brennan, who...
wonderful man.
Well, I'm just going to play the clip and then
wonderful
I'll come
guy.
In.
Your mere mention to be on the show triggered Senator Johnson.
Triggered.
Do you understand how we got
triggered.
Here? And how would you explain to somebody you've
triggered.
Been completely character assassinated and eviscerated? And it doesn't matter whether people like you or hate you. I think everybody can agree.
Oh, yeah.
You've
oh,
been
yeah.
put through this.
Definitely.
Oh,
by the way, before we get to his answer.
I can know. Well, you and I can agree,
recall.
Scott, as reasonable people.
Let's recall.
John Brennan's been put through the ringer. What's been done to him is
and by the way,
shameful.
As I recall, what's
it's
been...
It's impeachable, by the way. impeachable.
What's been done to him is he's got a fantastic NBC contract, to be sure, which pays him for these appearances. But John Brennan is one of these people who pretended... that he had seen inside information during
just like Adam Schiff.
Trump.
Just like Adam Schiff.
We don't have...
Brennan
you know... Schiff is a partisan. Brennan wasn't supposed to be a CIA director, Tim. There's a pretty
it's hard to distinguish between them at this point, you know.
So Brennan made it out like, hey, I'm the CIA director. I can't tell you what I've seen, but if you saw what I saw, you would know that Trump and these Russians are...
There
so that's
go.
The disgusting,
sure.
vile
yeah.
lie
yeah.
that,
trust
that
me
John
on this.
Brennan
trust
told
me on this. Trust
and that
me
he's
this.
Been eviscerated yeah. for. A lie in service to destroying our country, in a way. So this is the CIA director, Archie. Also animated against John Brennan's lies. It's
Archie,
very upsetting.
It's funny thing. Every time we talk about John Brennan, Archie gets all exercised. All right,
we'll
he
get
gets
back
hot
to,
and bothered.
We'll get back to Brennan here on Meet the Depressed.
Okay. You understand how you got here?
Well, I think it all goes back to Mr. Trump and his dishonesty and his complete obliteration of the norms of honesty in terms of his public statements. He was the one who started the Bertha conspiracy as far as Barack Obama was concerned. He has continued to fabricate information.
Now, that's a lie. President Obama did not fabricate the Barack Obama birther conspiracy. If you do your research into that,
Hillary
you
Clinton.
Can see, well, actually, there's some... That there's strong evidence to suggest that it was not Hillary, although it's more likely that it was Hillary than Donald. Actually, I think, Tim, based on my research for this Uprising episode, it was some lower-level sort of hangabout political types from online, one of whom identifies as, I'll use the gendered language, identifies as a Democrat, and one of them who has identified both as a Republican and a Democrat. But the point I'm making is... That's a strong claim that he invented that claim against Barack Obama, which a lot of people on the left and in Democrat circles have a kind of a visceral hatred for that claim. And so he's attributing it to Donald Trump. But does Chuck Todd interrupt him and say, no, that's not true? Like, we have all
no,
these
lies. Of course he doesn't, because look, I mean, the journalistic standard, I mean, we're so, I think we're just way past even that argument, because they've given up being an adversarial media, which is the purpose of their protection in the First Amendment, so that they would be adversarial, not to any particular president, but to those in power in general, but not to favor one group that is at war with another, but to be a referee in that war. They're no longer a referee.
Chuck Todd is on Team Dem, and he's on Team Never Trump, to be sure. He's a co-captain at this point.
He is, to me, the face, the admittedly diminutive face of the swamp media. Nobody, no single person probably better typifies what the swamp is all about in terms of the public face of the swamp than Upchuck Todd.
Thank you for throwing in the ad hominem there. I appreciate that and agree.
It's you encourage it, and I just fall right in line behind you. You're rooting me on for this. Like, can't you get more scurrilous, please? Get a little more scurrilous, would you?
All right. And now we turn to where you really butter your bread, Tim, as the Joe Biden for President correspondent of the uprising. You're abandoning your former co-host duties.
The bread and butter of my very
position.
Life, Scott. Yes.
What?
All that I've sacrificed.
A few hours before we went to pod, I slacked you this story that Joe Biden has now. Tim, it's a really grave moment in the Republican history. He's seen the light. He's made the decision.
Stop the presses. Joe Biden calls for Trump's impeachment.
He's had his stiff drink and come to terms with where things are, and now supports the impeachment of Donald J. Trump, President of the United States.
For me, at this point with Biden, it's a matter of let's do an office pool of how many days before Biden is forced to pull out because he's so inept, because he's old stumbling and bumbling, and Ukraine is killing him. Look, the numbers don't lie, Scott. He's now basically behind Elizabeth Warren. Okay, last week we talked, he'd gone from double digits very precipitously down in the course of maybe 10 days, down to 2 points in the lead. Now he's behind in the Real Clear Politics average, and the trend is very damaging for him because people are seeing all the weaknesses of his candidacy and this idea that he's the common man's answer to Donald Trump. I mean, he's just never even going to get there. I think he'll get steamrolled by Elizabeth Warren because, frankly, Scott, within the framework of the Democratic primary, Elizabeth Warren's a much, much better candidate.
Well, the news for Biden on Ukraine keeps getting worse. This is one of those things where I'm sure that Dr. Jill Biden is now sorry that she ever agreed.
Thank you for including the honorific.
Honorific? Excuse me. It's not an honorific. She earned that, Tim.
Yes.
She has the doctor of philosophy in wherever she got that degree in, right? Elementary education or something.
You know,
Melania
ought to, Melania ought to get some kind of like
it's
online.
Just the same as an engineering doctor.
She ought to get like an online degree and then demand that the media call her Dr. Melania Trump.
Here's the thing. They'll figure out a way. You know, she's so impressive for being like her how many languages she speaks and the businesses she owns and runs. And like, meanwhile, Michelle Obama, you'll hear, you know, she's stunning and beautiful, right? But Melania's not. You know, they don't, the NBC's, they don't do soft focus features on Melania's physical beauty or talk about it like they do with Michelle. And by the way, Michelle Obama had a make work job at the University of Chicago, which is to say, they wanted to have a U.S. senator in their pocket. And why the hell wouldn't you? Because of the power that they can bring. So they gave
you mean
his
sort
wife,
of like the Ukrainian mining company that wanted to have somebody of related to someone of high influence on their board and were willing to pay, what, 50, 80, whatever it was, $1,000 a month to have Hunter Biden.
That kind of cynicism will not abide here at the uprising. Yeah. This is how important Michelle Obama's job was to the University of Chicago. When she left because Barack Obama was running for president, you know who they replaced her with?
Nobody.
You stole my thunder. Yes, they replaced her with nobody because
Scott,
it wasn't a
Scott, look, you don't know.
They couldn't get the,
Scott,
another wife of a U.S. Senate or husband. Let's not be
you don't
know
the full story. The full story includes the fact that, honestly, the prices of real estate went up significantly in Chicago, and the need for more storage of documents was so overwhelming that they needed that extra office, and it overwhelmed the need to actually replace Michelle Obama with another comparably talented
mid 300s too is what she was pulling in at that job too. This was not, you know, 40K.
But this is again, Scott, this is a just again with Michelle Obama, with Joe Biden, with Hunter Biden, with the obvious flagrant self-dealing that either Biden or his son, and I don't know really what the difference is, really is. This is exactly what people voted against in 2016. Nobody's going to elect Joe Biden. He's a continuation of Hillary Clinton.
Right now, in this room, on this podcast, through the vehicle of LibertyNation.com, it's the uprising against all of that. It's why I claim the mantle of Andrew Breitbart and
intellectual heir. We called it this in the first book, and we have three books, by the way. We have three books published, and the first one is called Six Semper Tyrannis, The Uprising of the Common Man. And that's what this is. And it's not just here. It's in Europe. It's in England. It's in Brexit. It's in France. It's in Italy. It's spreading all over the world.
I want to play you Kamala Harris's this is her on this is what she thinks.
She's such a horrible candidate, Scott. I can't believe how bad she is.
Here's what I want you to do.
I really thought she'd be pretty good.
I want you to think of this statement as if she were the nominee. She's competing to be the nominee.
Right.
Okay.
Not really. She's competing to be number two on the ticket. Like,
I want to take her. In other words, everything that Trump said is talked about how it's, you know, inappropriate, this, that, and the other thing. Well, when do we get appropriateness from anyone, Tim? This is Kamala Harris.
Okay. The president's tweets and his behaviors about this are just further evidence of the fact that he uses his power in a way that is designed to beat people down instead of lift people up. Frankly, when you look at what he's been tweeting today, directed at the whistleblower, directed at so many people, I frankly think that based on this and all we've seen him do before, including attacking members of Congress, that he frankly should be, his Twitter account should be suspended. I think there is plenty of now evidence to suggest that he is irresponsible with his words in a way that could result in harm to other people. And so the privilege of using those words in that way should probably be taken from him.
Yeah, see, that's the kind of thing Jack Dorsey, Tim.
But you know what that is?
What if your Twitter chairman, Jack Dorsey, and she wins the nomination? How is that an appropriate thing for her to say that a private corporation—
She is not going to win the nomination. That is the classic attempt by a desperate candidate who has flailed away and just failed as a candidate to a point I don't think anybody, including myself, expected. She seemed like she'd be a pretty good candidate. She's been a horrible candidate. She's desperate, and she's looking for some new angle on this whole impeachment thing.
I think
so. This is her new angle to try and get and grab some headlines. And
it's all about another instance of somebody says what I don't like, and her position in the marketplace of candidates shows that her message isn't getting traction like Trump's is on the other side.
Sixth place.
What do you do? Shut him down.
Right.
What do you do? the president's saying something that I don't, this person's saying something I don't like, shut them down.
And what
that
do we
is
call,
progressivism and what, in America.
And what do we call that here? One step thinking. I don't like what he says. Let's just stop him from saying it.
I'm sure with a straight face, she would say that she's a champion of First Amendment rights, too. Meanwhile, calling on a private company, and again, I understand that this it's not First Amendment protected activity. It's not a government action. But what happens when a government actor like Kamala Harris, who wants to be president of the United States, implores the Twitter Corporation to remove the rights of its customer?
Right. She hasn't even thought that through. That's the whole point, Scott. She doesn't think through anything she says. How many times have you heard her ask a question on a difficult issue saying, yeah, I think we ought to have a conversation about that.
And then she giggles moves on.
Excuse me. This is the place where you have the conversation. How many times she said, well, yeah, you know, I think, yeah, probably so. Probably a good thing. It comes to mind the expression for Kamala Harris that the emperor has no clothes. There's nothing there. She's simply a political hack who, you know, was brought up through the California a leftist progressive establishment and ushered through it by Willie Brown and made it all the way to the top, probably ran some good races.
Ushered, is that the term we're using ushered. Now to describe coitus? That's a new one for me, Tim.
But he also, in addition to the a personal relationship that she had
the,
with
she, Tim,
with
she put Willie, the time in.
All right, but
we
look,
can't
Willie,
say
Willie
that
may
she
have,
didn't
Willie,
take a look at
Willie may have had a lot of romantic charges over the years. Not saying he did, but it's possible. Okay. He didn't usher each one of them then subsequently through to becoming the
she
Attorney
made a
General
deal.
Of California.
She's no dummy. Yeah. She made a better deal with them.
Yeah. Well, but he also recognized something that, you know, I thought I saw, which was some political talent. I thought she, you know, I thought she would be a force. I thought she would challenge the, you know, the Sanders and Warren progressives.
She
I thought
can't
she
be
seemed
seen as a descendant of American slaves, and that's the stumbling block. She's an Indian lady married to a white guy, and that doesn't play for the black vote in America, and she has to win that black primary.
But Elizabeth Warren is leading, and I can't think of a
she's
woman who could be more unattractive
Indian.
To black
She's
people.
More genuine as a fake Indian than Kamala Harris is.
Oh, that's true. That's like the ultimate insult.
There you go.
Pocahontas is actually more genuine than Kamala Harris. Talk about, wow.
I want to talk about these the China NBA thing before we go. You want to play this wingnut Jill Wine before we get off of impeachment?
Yeah, I just got a bit just to show you the kind of thing that was once thought to be and you know should still be just by virtue of their parent company and the size and scope of them and the talent that they are able to acquire. MSNBC would put on a woman like this whose name is Jill Wine Banks with a hyphenated name. Who was a
right away? That's trouble.
That's trouble right away. Watergate. Former prosecutor during the Watergate investigation, and they put this woman on the air. Let me just say before she says this that they ran this of her with her scheme and bumbling and stumbling. It's almost painful to listen to. And then what you're about to hear, they never challenged her.
You could impeach Pence first. The problem is that Donald Trump then has to name his replacement. But I think that maybe a deal could be struck where he was told if you don't make a replacement, then Nancy Pelosi does become president. And so you are going to be impeached and convicted. You need to make this replacement so that the proper party remains in power.
So that the proper party.
Who's the proper party?
You can't. Don't try to discern what she's really saying. Other than the only thing, first of all, is a rambling, incoherent babbling about you impeach Pence first, and then you leave the vice presidency vacant, and then you go to Trump and you say you better name a vice president that we tell you to name, so that when we impeach you, that person from the did you hear the words again? Proper party,
you know,
will be elevated
all
to the presidency. And Nancy Pelosi as president, by the way. She dropped that one in too. Nancy Pelosi as president. this stuff is being aired on
all this
mainstream
stuff. Just makes you want to
media.
Go back to a simpler time when the press never said a bad word about the president ever, like when Barack Hussein yeah. Obama was president of the United States,
when
and we didn't have
was heard
any problems in this country.
Word, and the skies were not
when the poor South American children in cages just weren't talked about
home,
or photographed.
Home with Barack.
All right. Well, let's turn our attention to China real quick. I just want to talk. Have you seen this NBA story with
yes,
the tweet and whatever?
I certainly have.
So
ready to cave right away, weren't they?
Can you give a thumbnail sketch of the issue for the listeners?
Well, the coach of the Houston Rockets made a statement. First of all, you got to look at the background. Is NBA is, and I'm not a big NBA fan at all. I don't pay attention at all, but I used to, and I have an understanding of the basic structure. But they have a growing relationship with China. They play a bunch of exhibition games there. They want to get a lot of loving from China, and China loves the idea of being next to these.
Don't forget about those jerseys
NBA
and
stars.
Hats and sneakers,
of all
too.
Of that. The merchandising yeah. is huge all over China. So while they were in the midst of one of these tours, the Houston Rockets coach had dared to express his support for the protesters.
For
the freedom protesters in Hong Kong for individual rights, exactly what you're saying. He dared to do that. And oh, the firestorm, because the Chinese government is, we're throwing buckets of billions of dollars your way. And what we get is one of your coaches coming out and saying, we support the,
yeah.
or he supports even, just him is enough. Supports the
let's re-engineer the whole NFL, by the way, to accommodate one man's quest to bring Black Lives Matter issues into the league.
I completely support that, yes.
But at the same time, China, which recognizes no individual rights above the state is supreme in China.
Correct.
Well, no, we cannot question them because that's where our bread is buttered. And somehow, Tim, as I live and breathe, there's always this reluctance by those on the left, as much as there is a reflexive jump to criticize the United States of America, the place where we fought a war to end slavery, the place where gays can get married, and the places where the very notion of allowing for changes in our society to recognize the vision of our founders, where everybody has the right to life, liberty, and happiness. There's this reflexive notion to hit as hard as possible there. And yet China, where nobody would ever want to live who cares about being able to breathe and speak freely, criticism of that will somehow be smashed down and disallowed.
Well, and you know, it's dollars uber allus. I don't even think it's some sort of left-wing bent from the NBA, left-wing as they are or are forced to be, because, you know, they don't want it to be becoming any more of a hotbed of radicalism and to start down the road of the NFL with the kneeling and all that stuff. In this case, I think it's really just more the almighty dollar, that they just don't think they can offend, you know, their Chinese customers, clients, whatever you want to call them. And they feel like they're willing to just rhetorically throw the Hong Kong protesters effectively under the bus for the sake of their massive relationship, massive financial relationship with the People's Republic of China.
So brave.
So brave. and you don't expect brave when there's that many bucks at and it's not just bucks, it's also a branding, marketing into the, you know, the second largest economy in the world. So I mean, you can understand why the NBA wants to get in there.
If you want to be Muhammad Ali, as so many of these people do, right? Cap wants to be Muhammad Ali, Colin Kaepernick, right?
Sure.
You get to be Muhammad Ali by taking a position that does cost you. In other words, nobody needs to stand up for popular speech, right? We don't have
a First Amendment. You also get to speak to a far greater degree when you're the heavyweight champion of the world instead of a washed up backup quarterback on his way out of the NFL. There's something to be said for that too. That, you know, who are you? You're just a backup guy that's probably not going to play in most games unless all you're doing is you're like the vice president who's waiting for the president to get killed. You're the backup quarterback waiting for the starting quarterback to get injured or to play lousy. That's all you are. So I think that has a lot to do with it as well.
Rumble, young man, rumble. Tim Donner in studio. Thank you for joining us. Archie the Podcasting Dog, thank you for joining us. This has been The Uprising, a podcast of LibertyNation.com. Please visit LibertyNation.com for all your conservatarian news and analysis. You want to say goodbye to the people, Tim?
Hasta mañana.
Bye-bye.